I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Summertime in this city can be sweltering, but a good glass of chilled wine can be just the thing to cool off. This hour, wine expert Doug Frost joins us again to talk tannins. He'll offer up his recommendations for the best bottles to go with your relaxing summer evenings. From perfect pairings at barbecues to sultry sips by the pool, we'll figure out whether you should go floral or full-bodied on your next trip to the store. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Who drinks wine when it's this hot outside? Well, his name is Doug Frost, and he's one of three people on the planet who's both a master of wine and a master sommelier. To me, this is beer weather, but there are ways, it's been said, to enjoy wine even on 95-degree days like this one. So today, a conversation about summer wine, how to pick a summer wine, and we'll also talk about Doug Frost's top five KC area summer wines. Doug Frost is a Kansas City-based wine and spirits writer and consultant who for decades has happily educated the public about all things drink. He's one of only three people, as I said, on the planet to have earned the coveted titles of Master Sommelier and Master of Wine. And, Doug, it's always good to have you here.
Well, thank you. Great to be here, Steve.
Yeah. I know you're going to say yes to this one, but do you drink wine in heat like this? Because to me, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, you know, the important asset of any beverage at this point is cold. Really, really cold. So, I'll drink wine, but I tend towards very cold. In fact, I have a friend who likes to throw ice in her wine, and she always looks at me like, "You're going to get mad at me now?" And I'm like, "No, that's totally awesome. You know, do that."
Yeah.
Winemakers put a little water in their wines. Why shouldn't we do the same?
But you need H2O in your body, so how does wine sort of get you there?
You know, the truth is, well, there's a lot of water inside wine. It's about 90% water. So
is it 90%?
Yeah, but the same is true of any time of the year. If you're going to be drinking alcohol, it's a diuretic. You need to drink water. You know, typically the rule should always be a glass of water for every glass of wine, or a glass of water for every cocktail, or a glass of wine for every glass of water. Excuse me. I kind of like the glass of wine for every beer,
but a
glass of water for any alcohol beverage, just to be safe,
just to keep your body
to be healthy,
cleared a little bit.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Do you still do that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I drink more than my fair share of water. It's sometimes hard to remember to do that in the dead of summer because it's so humid, and you often don't think of it as much as I might in the wintertime when it's so dry. But yeah, you just got to do it. You got to replenish.
So make a case for a glass of wine over a personal favorite like a gin and tonic this time of year.
Actually, I won't. I mean, the truth is, a gin and tonic is one of the most remarkable drinks mankind has ever created, and it's a remarkable drink in so much as the tonic, it was quinine water. We don't do that anymore, but quinine being the bitter bark of the cinchona tree. And that was used to combat malaria. So this was an invention of the British Army when the British Army were losing in India more soldiers to malaria and to problems like that, health problems, than they were to combatants. So the idea was that you would have some lime for scurvy. You needed lime juice for scurvy. Huh. You needed quinine for to combat malaria. And it really goes down with a little bit of mother's milk, mother's ruin, either way, as it was called in those days, some gin. And I think the only thing that we as Americans really did to that drink was we added ice, because ice is really, certainly ice as a commercial product is an American invention of the mid-19th century. And still to this day, I've had those moments in a European bar where I go, "Oh, yeah, listen, could I have some ice?" And they kind of look at me like, "Oh, yeah, you're American, no problem." And they grab their tongs and they pick up a single cube of ice and they drop it in there. And I'm like, "Can I get some more ice here?" And they're like, "These Americans." And they give me two ice cubes.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine a better summertime drink than a G&T.
G&T, it's perfect. It has bracing.
Yes.
It really has a tactile sort of attack that I think is part of what makes it so remarkable. The gin is all floral at that point. You get some of the gin, sort of root vegetable notes, and you can tell that I like gin just as much as I suppose as I like wine. But I find that gin is still, you know, there are as many gins as are on the market now. And there are now actually over 200 gins on the market, which is complete madness, because when I was a bartender, like 30 years ago, 35 years ago, we had three, you know.
Yeah.
If you had three gins, you're done. That's all of them. But the problem for me is that they're not always justified. You know, some of them are real juniper heavy. Some of them are real lavender heavy. Some of them are real floral. Some are real herbal, la, 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 la. But, you know, how many different versions of gin do you need before you've got the spread covered? And even with that, I can get thousands and tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of differing flavors from these differing wines. And gin and tonic, I can't drink the same thing day after day, no matter how tasty it might be.
Well, we have a team of reporters from Harvest Public Media in here eyeing you hungrily to sample some wine that you brought with you. So if you want to get about the task of opening a bottle before I have a mutiny on my hands here, that might be a really, really good plan. I was going to ask you about gin, Doug, because you just wrote a column about it. And you said that American gin is an unruly child. Its flavors are unpredictable and rarely balanced. But despite that, there are 10 times as many gin brands on the market today as there were 10 years ago. The market, when you wrote this, said it really hasn't moved. Why not?
I don't know. I would
meaning
have to be.
You're not selling more of it, even though there's more brands available.
Yeah, we're selling a little bit more of it, but not enough to justify 200 brands. Mm-hmm. And that's probably part of my complaint, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think that it's a familiar sound.
Yeah, there
I think
you go.
It's. I think it's true that all of these gins are trying, you know, desperately to be important in the marketplace, and there's really some wonderful new American gins that we can talk about. But the issue to me ultimately is that the market is sort of bored by gin, or at least scared by gin, or whatever it is. Often, a lot of us who try to explain gin to people will say, "Look, you know, this is a really delicious drink. It has gin in it," and they're like, "Oh, no, I don't like gin, man. Gin makes me crazy." You know,
yeah,
and it's like,
no.
Right. It's really it has this wonderful aroma to it. And you don't want to say juniper at that point, because they don't even know what juniper smells like. What you want to say is it smells like evergreen trees. It smells like Christmas trees, you know. And so it's like a little Christmas package. It's a little Christmas present, as a friend of mine, Steve Olson, likes to say. So, you know, you got to talk about familiar flavors, and then maybe they'll go for gin.
Well, do you have a favorite brand that you like to recommend when it comes to gin?
Well, I am a traditionalist, without question. I'm a Tanqueray kind of guy.
Yeah.
I like Tanqueray 10, however, as a so-called non-traditional. I like Hendrick's very much. I think that's a really fascinating gin. I think Beefeater is one of those tried and true. Bootles is one of those tried and trues that people don't see. I tend to be more of a traditionalist, and a lot of the new gins don't interest me as much. But amongst American gins that are trying to make a place on the market, Death's Door has done a good job, and they're consistent, which is the real difficult thing with gin. You've got all these different, you know, flavors and aromas. It's so difficult to make the same gin every time. That's why the big boys got so big. They're really good at it.
Yeah. Let me get our listeners involved here. How much wine do you drink in heat like this, and what is your favorite summertime drink? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org. You can also tweet us @KCUR UpToDate. Well, again, from Harvest Public Media today, Donna Vestal, Jeremy Bernfeld, and Payne Roberts are all here. Have you all had a chance to sample the latest here, Jeremy?
I'm about to take my first sip. Thanks so much for this tough assignment.
Yeah, absolutely. And hard to take a break during the middle of the day like this. But did you swing it around and smell and all that?
I tried to smell it. It does smell instantly refreshing, I'd say. I mean, I feel like I'm ready. I don't know if I'm ready to go back to work, but I'm certainly ready to take this sip here.
Very nice phrase, instantly refreshing. Jeremy's been reading some wine magazines.
It has a bit of a floral nose to it. This is actually a Torrontes is the name of the grape. It's an Argentine grape. Although the Spanish try to claim it as well, but it's actually an accidental crossing between a couple of grapes in Argentina, probably about a century and a half ago or so. And the Argentines have only recently decided to treat it with the respect that I think, or a lot of us think, it has been due.
Donna Vestal, what'd you think?
Oh, I love it.
Happy
but
Friday,
I'm a wine drinker, so, you know, you've just gotten me started early today.
And you loved what about it?
Well, I see on the bottle it says Rioja. Is that how you...
Well, it's from a region called La Rioja, which is named after the Riojan region in Spain, but it's Argentine.
Okay. Well, I had my first Rioja last summer in Maine, in Bar Harbor, and we searched for that wine. We could not find it here in Kansas City because we loved it so much. So this reminds me of that, and just a lovely freshness, I think, is the best word.
Wonderful. Yeah, fresh is good.
Payne?
It's hard to follow up instantly refreshing. being, you know, recently 21, any alcohol is good alcohol, and I'm happy to try.
I'm glad to hear you say 21, by the way. If you were underage, we'd have a real problem here.
Yes. I'm happy to try anything, but this is very light, and, I mean, it just has the essence of summer. So I think it's good for this time of year.
The essence of summer. God, these people are incredible.
We're just putting them to work from here on out. You're the team.
Well, yes, and you talked about putting ice in wine, which I do. I tend to, because I like in the evening, it's hot out. I like to have a little ice in my wine. And I think this would work pretty well with, you know, I just have to keep refreshing the wine so it doesn't get watered down too much.
Well, that's what I don't know. I mean, I'm no expert, despite what you may have just heard. I'm no expert. But it's not weak. Like, I would have thought that a chilled summer wine would be kind of meek, but there's a lot of taste there.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. Yeah, I think Torrontes, if it has a weak side, it is that a lot of times it's all nose and no body. It often has this lovely floral note to it, but a lot of times the body is a little bit light. This is Tamari, and I think they do a good job with it. And so I'm just delighted to hear you say that.
Torrontes.
The big question, how much is that bottle of wine?
The Tamari Torrontes, don't know the exact price, but it would probably be just under $15.
Francis. That's within your budget, Donna Vestal.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, my voice is croaky today. Hey, 816-235-2888. We're talking about summertime drinks. How much wine do you drink in heat like this? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. Chris from Lenexa. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Steve and Doug. My question has to do with, you asked about summer drinks, and I find myself, I really enjoy a good sangria, but I haven't been able to come up with a recipe I like, which I want to make it from scratch.
He's breaking up a little bit of recipe he can make from scratch.
Sure. There's as many different sangria recipes as there are makers. But I think the simple truth is you need a lot of fruit. You need a lot of fresh fruit. I certainly believe that what you need is a red wine that has, let's say, no sweetness to it, for one. Secondarily, that has a lot of fruitiness to it. But if you look at sangria recipes from a century or more ago, what you see is people using actually wines that weren't very fruity, that were a little more earthy. A lot of wines similar to Riojas, as Donna was talking about, only a red version of that. And then for me, the secret ingredient has always been to make sure that you add something sweet, whether it's the fruit juice, which is what I tend to focus on. Some people will actually add sugar or simple syrup. And the secret ingredient ultimately for me has always been brandy. If you add a really nice brandy, it adds to the punch of this aforesaid punch. So, it makes your sangria a little more intense. Add a lot of ice, once again, because you want it ice cold and you're trying to water it down. You know, the whole idea of adding ice and mixing a drink, for instance, when you add ice, is you're watering that drink down by shaking it sometimes 20 or 25%. So there's nothing wrong with adding ice to an alcohol beverage.
Master of Wine, Master Sommelier, Doug Frost is our guest. Again, our number 816-235-2888. Our board is full. Option 2, email us at updatedate@kcur.org. Larry from Lawrence. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you all?
Well, thanks. Couldn't be better, actually.
Well, I have to agree with your guest this morning. There's nothing better than gin during the summer. It's refreshing. It's crisp. And I tend to like it at home in the evenings, just ice cold in a martini stem. But when it's really hot out, I want a summer drink. I found that instead of the traditional gin and tonic, and it's even lower in calories, I love the ginger ale and diet ginger ale and gin. But and also, when you go to ask for Boodles gin in a restaurant, they look at you like you're crazy.
Oh, it's true. Boodles has just disappeared. It's really sad.
What a cute name.
It was. It's a good gin. Yeah, I'm afraid it's been sort of shunted aside by this absolute flood of new labels that have shown up. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the market speaking. I don't know. But, I like Boodles, too. I've got a soft spot in my heart for the stuff.
It's like the name of a little puppy dog. Boodles. Come here, Boodles. Yeah, Larry, thanks for
and
the call.
And then you reach into the freezer and get Boodles.
Larry, thank you. Cindy from Overland Park. Cindy, happy weekend and welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
I had a good tip. if someone doesn't want to water down their wine with ice cubes, since I get my wine at Trader Joe's and I'm there already and they have fruit, I freeze grapes and use those as my ice.
Oh, you are cool. That's extremely cool. I like that a lot. I mean, there's a lot of synthetic ice cubes that you can chill down and drop in your drink. And I really would make a impassioned plea for the restaurants of the world to adopt better ice machines, because a lot of the ice that you see in most bars and restaurants is that ice that all you have to do is look at it for 10 seconds and it disappears. Oh. You know, in the old days, again, I go back to 35 years ago when I was a bartender, I still remember the first time this happened, this one guy who said, yeah, give me another scotch and keep the ice. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. The idea that an ice cube would still be in his drink 30 minutes after I served it to him is, you know, based upon a different era when ice was really hard and dense and cold. And when you get really good, you know, ice cubes that have been in a freezer situation for a week or so, they can be really hard and dense and they won't break down very quickly. But I love the idea of frozen grapes. That's killer.
Do you recall that era, Payne, back in the day of 21 years ago when ice was something, when ice was real ice and men were real men? Yeah. Let's go to Paul from Kansas City, Kansas. Paul, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a wonderful program.
Thanks.
I found it interesting you were talking about wine during the summer. I had the opportunity to go camping last night at Lake Perry, and we decided to take two bottles of wine, both a white and red. And I just wanted to say, you know, I think no matter the situation or scenario, I think wine fits it perfectly every time, even when it's 95 degrees out.
Now, why did that work for you, Paul? You're sitting outside in a tent by a lake. That's just hot. Why did that work for you?
Well, you know, you have a couple plastic wine glasses, you know, so they don't break if you drop them or they spill, and a little ice to chill things down while you're getting ready. You know, a lot of people, you know, will say like a red wine at room temp or 55 degrees. Well, somewhere in between that, you know, after an hour in the cooler is just perfect.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Paul. It's for me, it's just a matter of cold. That's all we're asking for. And and the mistake is to forget to put the bottle back in the cooler. You know, every time you pour it, put it back in the cooler, you know, stick the top on top. And these days with a lot of screw caps, like the wine we're having right now has a screw cap to it. It's nice and easy to do it. But I do the same thing exactly as you do with red wine. I put it in the cooler. We're going to have a red wine that's been in the cooler for a while just to prove the point here when we're done.
Paul, thank you for the call. So again, a master of wine, a master sommelier, no shame in buying a wine with a screw cap.
Oh, heavens no. It's a very nice closure for, particularly I think for wines that people are going to consume in the next several years. The jury, I guess, is still out as to what will happen 20 or 30 years hence. But the truth of the matter is it's really a more stable closure than a cork is. A cork is a piece of bark. It has fissures in it. Oxygen can sometimes migrate through it. It can get dried out, and if the bottle's standing upright for several years, and so it's not a perfect closure. A screw cap is a nearly perfect closure.
You know, our guests from Harvest Public Media have said nothing, but I can just feel the vibe here. They're ready for the second bottle of wine, even though they haven't really acknowledged it. But the stares and the tension
bring
in the room
it on
is growing.
Bring on
here.
More wine.
I also have a question.
Yeah,
really quickly.
Fire away,
when
Don.
You're talking about the cork and the screw, does that mean how quickly once you open a bottle of wine should you drink it?
Well, that is a great question, and unfortunately, it's the old "it depends." when you put a bottle of wine in the fridge, it will last longer than if you leave it out. So I put every bottle of wine, once I've opened it, red or white, into the fridge.
Good to know.
It's just going to slow down that slow oxidation that's going to happen. And then you run into this issue in which the pH of the wine will determine how long it lasts in there. So if you have, let's say, perhaps for some people, surprisingly, a German wine. A lot of German white wines are very, very high in acid. They could be very dry, and that's why a lot of times German producers have added some unfermented grape juice to it all to sweeten it up. Otherwise, it's really, really tangy and tart and kind of fierce. I'll have those things last in the fridge for 2-3 weeks without changing, which is bizarre in the world of wine. On the other hand, a Napa Cab, if I buy a lovely Napa Cab and I drink a glass or two with my wife and then we put it back in the fridge and I come back 3 days later, it's already starting to deteriorate and lose some of its fruit often because the pH is much higher. That's to say the acids are much lower.
I've been going with, I have to drink it within 2 nights.
It's a good rule. Yeah. Invite more friends over if those bottles are lingering. Yeah. For crying
out
loud.
Open.
Yeah. We're talking summertime drinks. If you drink wine during the summer, what is your favorite summertime drink? 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @kcurupdate. Do wine sales rise or fall in the summertime, Doug?
They tend to fall. The 4th of July is a big beer holiday. The beer industry actually has been greatly concerned over the fact that we, up until now, had a relatively wet and cool summer and that beer sales had fallen off as a result. I think we're making up for that now.
Mm-hmm. You know, Frank writes to us at updatedate@kcur.org. In the summer, I like a nice Gruner Veltliner, if I'm saying that right. I also love Stiegel Grapefruit Radler.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Stiegel. What is that? That's foreign language to me.
Exactly. Well, the Stiegel, head down to Grunauer and find discover the Stiegel thing. There are a whole class of drinks called shandies in which you mix, you know, fruit juices and beers. And we're now seeing them bottled and that sort of thing. And Stiegel, the Stiegel grapefruit thing is pretty awesome, really. Mm-hmm. It's, again, incredibly refreshing. Gruner Veltliner is a relatively unknown grape, although one that's increasingly consumed in the U.S. It's the number one grape in Austria. It can be made in a painfully, you know, sort of bone dry style. It can be made in a rich, robust style, but it's always dry. And so it can be, you know, therefore, as a result, seen as refreshing. It's got this bit of a citrus note. A lot of times to me, it has a green pear, green apple note as well.
Okay. Again, pour a second bottle. Open a second bottle if you don't mind.
Is it going actually, around? Yeah, we're in it. We're deep in that bottle.
It's happened right before my eyes. I didn't see it. Yeah. What is it?
This is from one of the iconic these days wineries of California called Bonnie Doon, run by a wonderfully crazy fellow named Randall Graham. And this is his Le Cigar Blanc. And cigar is it's named thus because many years ago when he first started this, he wanted to make wines that were an homage to the Rhone Valley in southern France. And what he knew that none of us knew is that in the early mid-50s that the Rhone Valley producers had heard about these flying saucers, you know, that were, you know, being talked about in the 50s and late 40s. Over there, they call them flying cigars because the illustrators made them in kind of a cigar shape. So they decree, they got passed by their local council a law forbidding any flying cigars from ever landing in their vineyards. And apparently it worked. So this is, ever since he's had this Le Cigar Volant, and this is the Blanc, but this is a reserve, and it's light years away from what we just had. It's it's much bigger and bolder, but it's almost impossible to describe the flavors. There's nothing real distinct about it other than its weight. It sort of sits on the palate like something big, like some big Yoda, but you can't quite see it. A disappearing Yoda.
I'm so glad you said that. I didn't know how to describe this wine.
He just took the words for you there. Jeremy?
I completely agree, obviously. To me, this seems like it might hold up better with food. You know, I mean, there's more, as you said, weight to it. So I can imagine, you know, even grilling burgers and dogs or something like that, that you could have this wine with that.
It's hard to disagree with a master of wine, isn't it? Whatever he says, you're going to probably end up agreeing
with.
Well,
and he's the guy pouring. I mean, do not disagree with that
I'm
guy.
I'm providing the wine.
Payne, what do you think?
Well, I noticed that resistance is futile, as it says on the back of the label. It is a very good wine, and I've enjoyed it.
You're speaking like for someone who just became legal, just turned 21. You're talking with a level of maturity and articulateness that may sort of belies your age a little bit here.
Well, I'm down here on my phone on dictionary.com looking for impressive words, Steve. So
it's working. It's working.
It's as if you've been drinking for, I don't know, ages.
Yes. Well, that is not true.
Yeah. Back to some phone calls here. Matt from Kansas City, Missouri. Matt, you're on the show. Good morning. You there, Matt? Let's go to Linda from Overland Park. Linda, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. I just wanted to mention Moscow Mule is one of my favorite summertime drinks.
Oh, yeah. That's a really delicious drink. And the Mule is a category. The Moscow Mule is essentially vodka and ginger beer, although you can make a version of it with ginger ale, I suppose. But it's a classic drink that helped launch vodka back in the 1950s. And classically, it's done in the copper mug as well, which, you know, keeps it colder longer. And it's just a really refreshing drink. It has a whole category. It creates a whole category of drinks, you know, mule drinks, as we often call them. And my favorite, the one that I find myself ordering a lot during the summertime, is the Dark and Stormy, which is basically Gosling's black rum and then ginger beer. And ginger beer is typically non-alcoholic, although once upon a time you could get an alcoholic version of it. So it's really just a maltier style of ginger ale. And that on the rocks with some rum in there, and then I always squeeze some lime on top of it. It's pretty marvelous summertime drinking. But back to the point you were talking about, Steve, it's a relatively low alcohol drink. And I think that is the truth of the matter in the summertime. It's easy to get, a little bit woozy in all that heat. It's best to completely make sure, to constantly make sure that you're adding water to whatever you're consuming. So a low alcohol drink that has a lot of ice, a lot of water, a lot of dilution to it is, I think, the safe way to be, especially if you're going to be in the sun.
Listeners, give us a shout and tell us what you're enjoying drinking at a very hot summer like this. 816-235-2888 and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. I wanted to go back to this current wine that you just poured from the state of California. You're even higher, I think, Doug, on wines from Washington State of late. You've been sort of touting them for a number of years.
I am a big fan of Washington State wines. I'm a big fan of Oregon wines. I think there must be part of it that I'm originally from Portland, Oregon, so I've always felt this a bit of a connection.
Yeah.
One of the things I think about Washington State wines is that it's more to my palate in so much as it's slightly colder, if not definitely cooler growing season than what we find typically in California. And the result of that is it has just a little more tartness to it. Mm-hmm. And that's more to my palate. So it comes down to this, that we really all have different palates. And that's what works for me. And I do love to tout it because I think it often gets shunted aside by the behemoth that is California wine. And I want people to know about it. But the frank truth is, I like it, and therefore I find myself talking about it. And I think anybody who writes about food and wine ought to be always reminding their readers or their listeners that it's personal. It's supposed to be personal because we actually have different palates, differing sensitivities, differing likes and dislikes based upon our bodies, not based upon some bizarre happenstance. Although, again, experience plays into that too.
That's the voice of Doug Frost. He's a master sommelier, a master of wine. Grace writes us to this on email. We enjoy L'Amour de Paris from Trader Joe's, a peach-infused sparkling French white wine. Very refreshing.
Yeah, sounds like fun. I mean, again, adding fruit flavors to any drink, I think, makes a lot of sense. It is something too, that it's that we're seeing a lot more of these blending of these categories than we've ever seen. And so we're actually seeing beers and wines mixed, we're seeing wines and spirits mixed, beers and spirits mixed, and I think that will continue at a greater and greater pace. And I think a lot of it is just nonsense. It's just laziness. They didn't have a very good drink to begin with, so they went ahead and doctored it up with something else. So I'm not putting, that drink down at all. I haven't had it, but I'm sure it's wonderful. The issue, I guess, is I'm saying that one should expect that as we see these kind of blended drinks, that they should be less expensive than the genuine article, because they probably are made of products that were bought at a lower cost to blend together to make something that does turn out to be nice and delicious. And products like that don't age well at all. But, that doesn't matter because you bought it to drink tonight.
Well, our friends from Harvest Public Media are hanging on every word here. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Doug Frost about great summertime drinks. We'll take your phone calls, too, at 816-235-2888. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Well, this hour we're visiting with Master of Wine, Master Sommelier Doug Frost. He's one of three people on this good earth who has those twin distinctions. We're talking about great summertime drinks. Do you drink wine during the summer? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Doug, you just had dinner at Justice Drugstore up in Smithville with two other master sommeliers, one from Denver and one from New York, and you made an interesting choice during that meal, and that was to allow management to choose your wines for each course. You say that master sommeliers are typically control freaks, but you gave over control over what you were drinking to the management. Why in the world would three master sommeliers make a decision like that?
You know, Jonathan Justice and his wife are very serious about what they do, yeah, and very careful about what they do and very thoughtful about what they do. And I haven't, you know, worked in that kitchen. I don't know that food intimately. And I trust when Camille says, you know, let's go with this wine, I'm like, well, of course, why wouldn't I do that? I mean, obviously, she's going to show me something I don't know most of the time. In some cases, it was actually a wine that I knew, and I was like, oh, awesome, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's more playful for me. I'm not so stuck on any particular flavor that I need that flavor, not to mention, you know, I can go home and open a bottle of wine if I want some particular flavor. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's more an issue of, gee, I know Jonathan is back in the back room playing with stuff, you know, back in the kitchen, I mean, playing with the stuff and trying to come up with new flavors. And Camille has seen this food for a long time. And so she and Jonathan have talked about what might be useful. And there you go. In a nutshell, it was more playful. It was more fun. Well, it added to the adventure.
So could a guy like me, could I have hung on your conversation as you guys talked about God knows what? What do three master sommeliers talk about?
You know, it's really funny. My wife will hang out at cocktail, you know, conventions and,
yeah,
and likes to hang out with spirits folks. And when we're, you know, doing some sort of bartender thing, she thinks that's cool. When I'm hanging out with wine people, she leaves the room. She finds us utterly boring, completely tedious. You know, it is – I don't know what it is about the wine business and the wine world that we are just, you know, ultimately kind of annoying people when, yeah, we really get going. It's like no matter what you tell me about, like, it, you know, if you'd say we have this Le Cigar 2010 Reserve, if you had brought it, it would be almost instantaneous that without thinking about it, my response would be, have you had the 2011? Oh, my God. Well, you know, I think the 2010 is pretty good, but the 11, you know, I really think the Grenache Blanc hit it out of the park that year. You know?
Yeah.
And we,
yeah,
all just start – because it's interesting and there's so much data and detail to it that we instantly dive into that and normal people find us horrifying.
What are we drinking right now? I've lost track of what the beverage of choices are on the table right now.
Well, this is Schloss Lisa. This is a German Riesling.
These are all white colored wines, so I'm losing track of what we're doing. There's no variety in terms of the color for your host to tell what's going on here.
Well, it's true. I'm sorry. But this, yeah, this is Riesling from Germany. I'm nuts about Riesling from Germany. In the summertime, this is probably what I consume the most of is this particular grape because ice cold, it still delivers flavor. It still delivers refreshing crispness. It has a little touch of sugar to it. This one is relatively dry, but it's just enough sweetness, enough fruitiness that I can pour it for anybody. And virtually anybody goes, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, it doesn't really matter what their level of so-called wine expertise would be or wine experience. Most everybody finds it refreshing and pleasing, and I sure do.
Well, Ryan Schussler and Sangeeta Shastri have joined us here to join our panel here in our studio today. And Sangeeta, do you want to give us a sense of what'd you think of this Riesling?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that description. I am by no means a wine expert whatsoever, but this was really refreshing, and I really liked that it was a bit sweeter and not overtly dry. So yeah, I enjoyed it greatly.
Sweeter, but not overtly dry. Ryan, what'd you think?
I'm a first time wine taster too. I'm recently 21, so this is new to me a little bit.
But it's brand new, right?
Brand
absolutely,
new.
Brand spanking new.
Never
absolutely
touched,
yeah,
it before.
Okay,
right. First
clear,
glass of wine.
Clear the record here. Yeah.
But I agree. I'm meeting Sangeeta in the middle ground. I'm not a fan of sweet wines, but this was just sweet enough, and yeah.
So you would think a newcomer to wine would be all over sweetness, though.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
from what little wine I've had, I prefer dry wine.
Yeah.
I think the world has changed and shifted a little bit. You know, our generation was weaned on these sweet, sweet sodas. And now there's just so much variety out there in terms of what you can drink in you know, for a beverage in a bottle. And so we have kids who, I think, thankfully, aren't consuming sweet sodas all the time. They're often drinking other drinks that may have, you know, some, you know, nutraceuticals in it, as,
yeah,
we call it, but certainly may have bittering agents, may be dry, may be sweet, all over the place.
Okay. Payne, what did you think?
I think it had kind of a bite to it. It almost tastes like it's somewhat carbonated. I don't know. Maybe that's an experience, but that's what I noticed.
No, it does. It has just a little bit of CO2, a little bit of carbon dioxide to it, you know, that little bite. And that bite over the next year or two or 3 years will fade as the bottle ages. And it's done purposefully, one, to make it sort of refreshing when it's young, but actually more importantly to help it age, because this bottle, as crazy as it sounds, is a wine that could last 10 or even 20 years. And in 10 years, it's going to get real earthy and kind of odd, and that bite will be gone. That will have disappeared, and it'll get smoother and more textured.
Well, Donna Vestal is a senior member of our critique team here. And I'm wondering, Donna...
Thank you very much.
Yes, there you go. I thought you'd offer a more mature vision of what's happening here.
Well, you know, I'm on my third glass of wine, so I'm having a great time here today. But, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Riesling.
Yeah.
My mom is German, so she loves the Riesling, and she is always serving it. So it's not my favorite. I like the others. It's a little too sweet for me.
A little too sweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is how it is and how it should be. We all like different things because mm-hmm. our bodies respond differently.
Dana wants to know, are there low-cost wine appreciation knowledge-building classes other than at Jackson County Community College? I don't know, Jackson County had a community college named Jackson County Community College.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't really know of any in the market, but a lot of the bigger retailers do tastings and do events, and they'll bring the vendors in, the distributors in, who are very knowledgeable often about their products and about wine in general. So you should check with your local retailers, as they say, and find out if they have classes or where they go to teach their people.
Yeah. Okay, Greg from Olathe. Greg, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today here is Doug Frost. Good morning. You there, Greg? Rebecca from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning. Rebecca, how about Anna from Overland Park? Anna, good morning.
I'm here. Hi.
Thank goodness you're there, Anna. Thanks for being loyal and hanging on. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, here's my comment. I love pina coladas, but usually they're too sweet, heavy, and syrupy, and I would love to know how to make one that has the wonderful flavors, but that's just kind of light, not so sweet, and just more refreshing.
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's one of those drinks that's really hard to get right, because everybody does sweeten it up a lot. I honestly would say, go hit some of the local smart bars, the people who are really serious about cocktails. And there's a number of them here, and a lot of things all revolve around Manifesto and Rieger and such. But there are certainly, many other places some really sharp people are working at. So, mm-hmm. And I would tell the bartender exactly what you want, and you don't want it too sweet. Most of the time, if you're using a premix, those things are I think sweet in a weird way. And so you're better off working from as much fresh ingredients as you can. But ultimately, you're dealing with some sort of, sweetened concoction when you're dealing with a pina colada in most cases. So the best thing you can do is tell that bartender and go experiment with a few different smart places. As I say, there's, M&S Grill, and all sorts of places all over the city. I hate to get into a list because I'll leave somebody out. And just tell them exactly what you're looking for and challenge them. And bartenders love that challenge when you say, look, I'm not – yeah, they love that when you say, look, I'm not trying to be critical. I just want to know, can you make me one that's not so darn sweet, that tastes a little bit more of the fruit and not so much of the sugar?
Okay, great.
Anna, thanks.
Okay.
Well, here's an observation from personal experience. Buying a gin and tonic at a restaurant, at a bar, oftentimes is a disappointing experience. The tonic is flat, too much gin. It doesn't work for me.
It should be the world's easiest drink.
It should be the world's easiest drink.
But you've hit upon a couple of things. As I said, I think the greatest bars have really good, big, hard, dense ice, so it doesn't dilute quickly. Honestly, anytime I get a drink, I ask for the brand by name, because most bars, not all, but most bars have pretty pedestrian brands in the well, as they say it. Mm-hmm. So if you just ask for a gin and tonic, they're going to grab stuff out of the well. And some of that has actually had citric acid added to it or sugar added to it. And it gets kind of funky, as opposed to the real brands, shall we say, the premium brands that are It's nothing but beer that has been distilled into a kind of vodka and then distilled another time with a whole bunch of botanicals, and that's where the aroma comes from.
And the tonic should be just bursting out of the bottle, shouldn't
it? That's the most important element.
It absolutely is, and it's always off.
So the trick is, if you're looking for a great bar, never you know, sorry to insult my bartending buddies, but never hang out at a bar that squirts tonic out of a gun. If it's tonic coming out of a gun, it's probably, you know, in my opinion,
it's old.
It's got that sweetened stuff to it. And if they're pouring tonic from a bottle, the best way to do it is from a small bottle, because tonic has to be fresh. If that bottle's been open for a day or two, pitch it. It's not fresh anymore.
I'm going to start a crusade. This is an issue that is near and dear to my heart, and it needs to change here in Kansas City. Maddox from Lenexa, good morning. You there, Maddox? Brad from Prairie Village. Brad, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi. I found that as you go through the town, the flavor of tap water changes the taste of the drink. So in my house, I have a water purifier, and I use it on my drinking water, my ice maker in the refrigerator, and I've got one of those little carbonators, and I use the pure water and all that. And I found that it doesn't change the taste of beer or wine if I want to cool it with ice cubes or something.
That is really cool. Yeah, that's in a perfect world. That's how every bar would function as well. Obviously, we don't live in a perfect world, but we all get used to the flavor of our tap water. However, it's one of the things I always notice because I travel a lot. When I come home and I drink a glass of water, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the flavor of this place. And by the next day, I'm like, what flavor? I don't get it. You know. And the same thing happens when I show up in a city. You really notice the flavor, and that kind of goes away. So I think people get used to it, but it's really true. Once you start to get this pure water flavor, it's interesting how it doesn't disrupt other flavors.
Okay. Tyler tweeted us this at KCUR Up to Date. I had a rhubarb wine. I love it. Rhubarb wine reminds me of Garrison Keillor. He's in town tonight. By the way, I'll be going to see him from a local winery in the South Dakota Black Hills. It was delicious, cold, and so different. Rhubarb wine.
Yeah, rhubarb's really interesting. It's like the only wine I can think of that we make from a, you know, quote-unquote vegetable. And it tastes like a fruit wine. I just did a flight of rhubarb wines up in Des Moines last week, and we found two of them that were fantastic. Three of them that, please don't ever serve this to anyone ever again, you know, and a couple of them that were like, it's all right. But yeah, there were a couple of them that were just delicious.
You have a fourth bottle there.
I have a pink wine because, you know, pink and cold go together. Finally, and then I brought a Pinot Noir along and I chilled it because I think chilled red wine is not heresy in the dead of summer. Ah. It's just good common sense.
Okay. EMP Cottle tweets us this. Where can I get a good, I'm going to butcher this, Melomel? M-E-L-O-M-E-L? Never heard of it.
I'm so sorry. I've seen the term. I have no idea what it means. I apologize.
He says, I used to brew my own for summer and don't seem to find them commercially. That ring a bell with anybody? No. Okay. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Doug Frost is our guest. We're wondering what you like to drink during the summertime. Do you like to drink wine when it's this hot? Our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Stephanie from Lenexa, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One of the things that caught my ear on you is your guest was talking about adding a touch of brandy to a drink. And I used to never be able to drink margaritas. And a few years ago, I discovered one called an El Presidente. And it was really delicious, and I found out that the reason I liked it was because it had a touch of really good, smooth brandy in it, and that just made the tequila more palatable. And does he have any recommendations for adding brandy to any other alcoholic drinks to make them more palatable?
Hmm. Well, actually, I guess yes and no. I think that the El Presidente drink is a really tasty drink, and there's a few different versions of it out there. There are people who have added Pisco, which is, you know, sort of unaged brandy, if you will, to tequila, and there are various versions, and it's a really fun and, to me, incredibly complex drink too. It's not just smooth, although, you know, you obviously like it as it's smooth, but for me it's complex, and so yeah, you can. You can add differing ingredients together and create greater complexity. But I am, as I said before, a bit of a purist in so much as I think the perfect world is where a drink has no more than, say, five ingredients and is more like three or four ingredients. You know, with all due respect to a lot of the hot bartenders in the world, when you see somebody back there having to take 10 minutes to make a drink and they've got 12 ingredients, I usually think, can I get a beer while you do that? And, you know, do you really need all that? Yeah. You know, but it's not, I think the El Presidente is such a cool drink. You should check with some of the bartenders around town and challenge them to make their version, because there's a few different versions out there.
Ah, I did not know that. I will have to do that, because I was never able to drink a margarita before. It was like drinking antifreeze. And this was just amazing. With that little bit of addition of the brandy, it just really made it delicious.
That's wonderful.
That sounds great, Stephanie. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're trying the Pinot around the table right now. Do I have that right?
Yes, Pinot Noir. And this is from Morgan Winery in the Central Coast. They're one of the, I think, one of the most reliable California Pinot Noir producers there is. This is 6 years old, too. This is a bit of a social experiment. So I'm just going to let y'all tell me what you think.
Payne, what do you think? Lead us off here.
I'm not a big fan of red wines, but, I mean, it is good. It's not too sharp, and I think it has a good mixture to it. I think it's down the middle.
Ryan Schussler, what do you think?
It may just be because I still have the Riesling in my mouth, but this, if I had closed my eyes, I wouldn't have known it was wine. It was really smooth, and it was
good.
I enjoyed it.
Very nice, yeah. Very nice. Sangeeta?
It's kind of woody, I think. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's been aged in barrels, and okay. The fact that it's colder, you know, you almost get that. What we get out of barrels are often flavors like cinnamon and nutmeg and allspice and clove, mm-hmm. but sometimes there's just the sense of, you know, like wood shavings and things like that. Yeah. And this one's doing that just a little bit. And I think it's partly because it's cold that particular flavor seems to come up, just as the fruit tends to come up when mm-hmm. you chill a wine down.
Do you like it?
I was going to say I love it. I love that it's rich.
Very nice adjectives. Very nice. Donna Vestal, bring it home for us here, would you? Donna Vestal from Harvest Public Media.
Well, I think the key is that it is cold, and I don't know that I've had red wine, this deep of red wine, cold, and so that's really interesting. And
does it work for you?
It does, and yeah. I'm a huge white wine drinker, so, I mean, especially in the summer, I think I almost always buy white wine.
I'm starting to wonder just how discerning you are. Everything seems to be working for you here today.
No, remember, I didn't like the Riesling so much.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
See, I
Thank
mean,
you for
I'm not
the
so much not so much into the sweet, but I love wine, and I talked to you earlier about the gluten-free aspect of wine. I can't drink beer because I have celiac disease. So for a lot of people who are on a gluten-free diet, wine is very appealing.
So you have no choice.
I have no choice whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, she has many choices, and today we had four.
Yeah. Kyle tweets us this, I drink a single malt scotch even in the summer, but it's hard to find a good selection in Kansas City restaurants. Does he have a point?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Although I must admit I go to places like Harry's Country Club and go, there's plenty up there.
Yeah.
You know, there are places in town that specialize, and that's where you go. And, yeah, I do have to admit, I think of a glass of single malt scotch and as being something that I really associate with cold weather. On the other hand, big, dense, you know, hard cube. I know this sounds like heresy to some people in the middle of my scotch, and that's going to last me for about an hour or so. And it's a pretty happy night when I can just sit there and coax that single malt scotch.
Stephen from Lewisburg. Stephen, you're on Up to Date with Doug Frost. Good morning.
Morning. I happen to know what Mellow Mel is.
Oh, well, good.
You're going to solve the mystery for us. Please do tell.
Yes. I'm out here at Middle Creek Winery on the Somerset Wine Trail in Miami County, and we actually make a Mellow Mel. It's honey fermented along with mulberries.
Ah, should have figured that out. Miel, the word for honey, and mel. Okay, that's awesome. So tell us about it. How do you make it?
We'll have some this fall. We just made it this season.
And how do you make it exactly? Do you just blend the two together? Do you ferment the two together? How does it work?
It has to be fermented together. Otherwise, you'd have a mead with mulberries added, and that doesn't work as well. So what we do is we ferment the honey and the mulberries together in a crock, just like you'd make a wine in a primary. And then we, of course, follow the winemaking process to finish.
That's wonderful. It's time for me to go out there and find that, because I haven't visited you guys.
Well, Stephen, hang on the line for a minute, because I've been doing this show with Doug Frost for 10 years. Stephen, you're the first guy who's ever stumped him. So Doug's agreed to take you on his next overseas wine tasting trip with him as a result. Am I right about that, Doug?
Possibly. But no, that sounds great. And it's back to this issue of these lines are now blurring the you know, what used to be bright lines between beer and mead and wine and spirit and cocktail and all that. They're blending a lot, and this is a really that's a cool version. Has Melomel been around a long time, or is it something relatively new? Do you know?
Actually, I got the recipe out of an old meat book that I have, and we also make one. We make pie mints, which have been around. They're mentioned in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, the pie mints. And so the Melomel, of course, has been around a long time also.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the call, Stephen. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Okay. You bet.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye. Ellen tweeted us at KCUR up to date to ask, what is PIMS made of? I don't know. It doesn't say on the label. And well, what is PIMS?
Yeah, PIMS cup is there are various versions of PIMS. And the PIMS cup is a cocktail made from PIMS. And once upon a time, there were seven versions of PIMS. I can't remember anymore which one was one and two and three and four. The one in the market is typically made with gin and other flavoring ingredients, but there have been various versions, so you could find others. But I think the only one left in the market is the gin version.
Yeah. Well, Doug, it's always great to have you here. It's always a Friday, always in a good mood when you're here, and thanks for taking the time again.
My pleasure. It's great to be here. Thank you.
And thanks for all our tasters from the newsroom and Harvest Public Media. It wasn't hard to coax you all in here, and we appreciate you taking some time off from the grind, by all means. Well, Doug Frost is a master of wine and a master sommelier. You can find a list of the wines he recommended today at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Ever look up at the sky and wonder why you can't always see the stars? Monday on the show, we'll take a look at light pollution and what you might see if we turned off the electricity. Our show's theme music normally is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KZUR's Kim Noble, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Shastri. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'll see you all tonight at Starlight with the Garrison Keillor Show. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.